only person you need in the morning other than your spouse. Here's Jeff Blair.
All right, so I come in this morning to do my job, my new job. I'm now on Sportsnet.ca. I'll be on TV. I'm writing for the magazine, all that good stuff. Hold your applause. I come in here, I sit down. My friend Ben Ennis looks at me, says, this Adam Lind thing with his mother. Are we talking James Reimer? You know the story by now. Adam Lind is going to get a second opinion on a foot injury. He says... His mother told him to go get an MRI and that the MRI showed stuff that the team doctors didn't see. So I get to play a reporter. So spent last night, this morning, making a couple of calls. This is my understanding of the situation. First of all, I have it from a pretty reliable source that the Jays are fairly pissed off, to put it bluntly. A couple of things to clear up. The 6 to 8 weeks thing that may in fact be accurate, depending on the second opinion. It's not 6 to 8 weeks from today. It would be 6 to 8 weeks from the time of the injury, which, if you go back, it looks like it's around mid-June. I'm told by people all the x-rays and CT scans at the time were negative. Adam Lind told the Jays he felt fine. The Jays don't always give an MRI to everyone, especially for bone fractures, which makes a certain amount of sense. When the Jays were at home, Adam was asked how he felt. He said he was feeling better. He played against Oakland. Of course, we know what happened. We saw him try to move around in Oakland. Obviously, he wasn't moving around that well. So there you go. He will get a second opinion. The Jays will not say anything publicly until the result of that second opinion is in. So a couple of things we know right now. There is some gray area here. I wasn't in the news conference, so I don't know. You know, I don't know how, or the media scrum. I don't know how Adam Lind presented it or anything. But the Jays clearly don't think that it's entirely accurate. So there you go. We'll await the results of the second opinion. I know there are a lot of you out there who are looking at this and saying it raises issues about the Jays medical staff. We won't say anything until we get the results of that second opinion, until the Jays comment publicly. But there you go. That's some background on the Adam Lind situation. Let's see if Shai Davidi can give us some more details.
The Jeff Blair Show is on the air on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Join the conversation with Jeff on Twitter using the hashtag Blair Show or call 416-870-0590. Now, here's Jeff Blair.
All right, welcome to the Jeff Blair Show. We will be carrying the Kyle Lowry news conference live at 10 bells, by the way. The Raptors are asking fans to get down to Real Sports. They're welcoming you for the Kyle Lowry news conference. NBA teams are already announcing contracts with players. The cone of silence, if you want to call it that, over the NBA offseason has been lifted. And we've known, of course, for a while now that Kyle Lowry's re-upping with the Toronto Raptors. Masai Ujiri is going to be able to hit the beach in the middle of July, knowing he's pretty much done all the heavy lifting. That's not bad. It's not bad if you're a general manager. So we'll go to that news conference live. And we, of course, are adjusting our schedule accordingly. Still want to get Scotty Bowman on to talk about the Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane deal. But we're all about the Blue Jays out of the gate. A bizarre story yesterday. Leave aside the game. And if you've had a chance to hear or read some of John Gibbons' comments about the game, there's not much else to say. It was pretty much a mess. The story this morning is Adam Lind. Adam Lind telling reporters yesterday that he had an MRI at the suggestion of his mom, which kind of raised a lot of eyebrows right away. And that MRI showed a fracture in his foot. He is going for a second opinion Friday in North Carolina. And of course, the first thing that everybody thinks about is, wait a minute here. This guy hurts his foot in mid-June, and in mid-July, his mother says, hey, son, you know what? If you're not feeling well, go get it looked at. And people are saying, where's the medical staff in this? Now, as I said, the Jays aren't going to comment on this publicly until the results of the second opinion are known. But, well, how to put this delicately? Adam Lind has put a lot of people in a pretty delicate situation this morning. Shai Davidi of Sportsnet took the red eye from California to Tampa Bay last night and has agreed to join us on the Jeff Blair Show. I've done that, and I got to tell you, Shai, last thing on earth I want to do is get in the radio after taking a red eye. So, well done. What do you think of this, you know, the stuff we're getting from a couple of sources right now? As I said, the Jays aren't making any comments on this publicly. But, man, I can tell you, a couple of people in the organization are really pissed off at Adam Lind right now.
Well, you know what? I got the sense that he wasn't necessarily thrilled with the other side of it. And the whole thing, like you said, was so bizarre. And, you know, he kind of said, you know, he said that, you know, he got the MRI at the behest of his mom and the foot hadn't been improving. And he'd kind of gotten sick of the pain and all that. And, you know, I think it took all of us a bit of a time to process it. I'm like, wait a minute, did they really say that? Is this how it happened? You know, and I think about it from the club's perspective, and they're like, you know, they did the X-ray, they did the CAT scan, and for a while there was some improvement. So you're like, okay, and then it plateaus. You're like, well, maybe he's piling all the pressure of the pounding from playing is just causing it to not help itself out or whatever the case is. And so I can perhaps see some logic in not automatically thinking, hey, maybe there's a need for an MRI, but this is so bad for how it looks. The optics of it are absolutely terrible, and given how important Adam Lind is, it's also terrible. So it's a really bad spot in the midst of a really bad road trip, in the midst of a really bad month for the Blue Jays. It's just piling on right now.
Now, we're going to have Will Carroll on at some point to talk about this, either in Baseball Central or later on this hour. He is Bleacher Report's injury expert. But my understanding is, just from reaching out to a couple of people, that teams do not automatically MRI a player, especially for bone fractures, that typically you rely on the X-rays and the CT scan for the bone fracture, and that the MRI is more of a soft tissue thing. That's kind of like the Cole's Notes version of what I've been told of sports medicine. But, I'm also told, frankly, that the MRI that was done in Anaheim was actually, you know, done after a discussion with the team. And again, this is just stuff I'm getting from a couple of people. And here's the thing. I don't think Adam Lind's a liar. I just wonder if there's a gray area here. And I'm trying to look at both sides here. I'm just wondering if there's a gray area here that we just don't, something just isn't connecting.
That's possible. And my understanding is, in terms of the process, is the same as you. Stress fractures, I believe, and I could be mistaken about this, but they're more difficult to identify in X-rays, and that they are more likely to show up in an MRI than an X-ray. I could be wrong on that, but I had an issue with my foot, and I remember talking to someone about it, and they explained it in that way as well. So, yeah, is there some gray area? Sure, and maybe Adam Lind had a discussion with his mom saying his foot wasn't getting better and said, well, have you had this test yet? And maybe said, no, that's not right. That's not what's needed. She said, well, maybe just get it anyways. And then he would have asked the team to set it up for him, and the process would have unfolded that way. But, you know, we're speculating a lot on this.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, you know, he did get the test when needed. But the fact that it took this long with a player of his importance, you know, makes you wonder a little bit. Like, and whose responsibility is that? Sometimes it's on the player to say to the team, you know, this really isn't right, and I can't keep playing. But, you know, Adam Lind knows the situation, knows his importance, and maybe he tried to play through it longer than he should have, too. So maybe there's some responsibility on his end as well. So you're right. I'm sure there's going to be some gray in this. But, you know, the optics and the frustration and all the things that have gone on over the past week, this is a cherry on top of the sundae in this storm, and it's like I said, it's just continuing to pile on at a bad time for the Blue Jays.
Shai Davidi of Sportsnet joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Shai is in Tampa with the Jays, who will play the Rays in a 3-game series starting tomorrow. The performance of Marcus Stroman yesterday. What do you think John Gibbons and the Jays took away from that outing?
I think it was just, one, at least John Gibbons, he was very impressed throughout that series with the Angels lineup. He really likes the way that they put down at-bats and the way they grind and the way they fight. And, you know, he said that a lot of that was credit to the Angels because they just, in a lot of ways, wore him out. You know, they didn't necessarily kill the ball against him. I mean, he gave up the home run to Calhoun that tied the game, but there weren't a ton of laser beams against them, but there were a lot of good at-bats, a few balls that found holes. So I don't know that they're going to draw too many conclusions out of it, just because, you know, you look at the start before against Oakland, another really good lineup. I mean, when he was just dominant. So I think it was just a bad day. And to be honest, it was a sloppy day for both teams. You know, as poorly as the Jays played, the Angels were doing their best not to win that game as well. And I said to someone, I think it was the fifth or sixth inning, I said, this doesn't feel like a nurse a lead home type of game, and it turned out not to be. But I don't know that there's necessarily too much to be read into this Stroman start there, aside from, you know, the Angels are pretty good, and he had a tough go with them.
John Gibbons' comments after the game about stupid plays costing the Jays, stupid baseball costing the Jays, referring to the to the slide at home plate, and nobody in the on deck circle. And generally, it happens: the guy in the on deck circle watches the play for the base runner and, you know, tells him to get down or, you know, go in standing up. And it's kind of one of those. It's one of those second nature things. You know, everybody says, well, you're taught that in Little League, and that's true. But it really is a second nature thing. And I have to admit, I didn't see it on TV at the time when I was watching it. But that was clearly something, Shai, that really got under John Gibbons' skin. I mean, you and I have both talked to John an awful lot. We know what it takes to get him to essentially hang a player out to dry. And, boy, he was... For him to do that is a pretty serious statement.
Yeah, and I think there's a cumulative effect, too. You think about the game on Tuesday where in the first inning, Steve Tolleson tries to steal third with two on, one out, and Jose Bautista up, and he gets thrown out. But even if he's safe, it's a bad play because then Bautista isn't going to get anything to hit. He's going to be walked intentionally. And on top of that, he doesn't have the green light, which he misinterpreted. And that's something that by July the 7th or 8th or whatever it was, that you should probably have straightened out. Mm-hmm. So there was that. Then there was Jose Reyes rounding first base way too aggressively and getting thrown out at first base. And there's just been so many other displays of bad baseball. I mean, the Jays went 3-for-16 with runners in scoring position yesterday. I mean, it's impressive that they were able to put together 16 at-bats with runners in scoring position, but three hits is not good at all. So you put all that together, I think the frustration boiled over, because sometimes those games, that little margin of error is what makes the difference. And so often for the Blue Jays of late, or at least in the past month, where they've been 10-21 since they hit their high water mark, little plays like that have cost them games, and that's what's helping the season slowly slip away. So, you know, he was definitely, I think he was justified in saying what he said. It's surprising because, like you said, he rarely ever does that. He doesn't like to do it. He goes out of his way to protect guys. But I think he's gotten to the point where he feels enough is enough, and that if guys aren't going to be a bit more focused and show a bit more concentration, then he's going to let them have it.
You know, Shai, a lot of people are already weighing in and saying, look, with Edwin hurt, with Brett Laurie hurt, and now with Lind hurt, and again, if I'm told that if in fact that the Jays think that the 6 to 8 week thing may in fact be 6 to 8 weeks from the original injury, not 6 to 8 weeks from now, but again, we'll wait and see what the second opinion is. But a lot of people are saying with those three players out, maybe Alex Anthopoulos has to approach this trade deadline a little differently and not throw in the towel and blow up the team or anything like that, but approach it from the standpoint of, if I've got three regulars out, one of whom could still be out for a while, and Brett Laurie, we don't really know about Edwin, it's going to be hard to replace what we're losing, to replace what we're lost. So maybe you approach the deadline a little differently and maybe be not as aggressive. But my argument in all this is, look, you're going to lose Melky Cabrera in the offseason. You're going to lose Colby Rasmus in the offseason. At least where we stand now, Shai, I think we can assume that. You know, you still don't have a second baseman. This organization needs at least a couple of position players, not just for now, but it needs guys in place for next year and the year after that and the year after that. This isn't necessarily a short-term fix when it comes to position players in this team.
Right, and on top of that, I mean, even if you want to add right now, this team isn't one move away. You know, it's not like, all right, we'll get a second baseman or a third baseman and we're good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at this point, I don't even know how you start fixing it, because do you get another outfielder, and then you put someone at DH? Do you try to get a first baseman? Do you get a third baseman, a second baseman? Do you still, you know, you probably need a right-handed reliever,
sure,
ultimately. So there are so many needs, and then right now so many injury holes and so many questions about when guys get back, that this isn't just easily fixable. And you can make a move and give up some assets and really not make much of a difference ultimately. So that's got to be a big factor in any calculations that they make, because, you know, you do want to spend your assets wisely. And you know, as much as Dalton Pompey could be a terrific trade chip, you know, he could be ready for the big leagues at some point next year. And maybe he's a long-term solution for you in center field if you don't believe in Anthony Gose. And I think the Blue Jays probably have a good idea of what Anthony Gose is and what some of his limitations are. So they've got a lot of decisions to make. How far do you push? I mean, the other thing is, and this is the big incentive to do something, is that this division, against all odds, won't run away from them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the Baltimore Orioles have a real meat grinder of a schedule coming out of the All-Star break, and they're going to be very catchable at that point. The New York Yankees could lose Masahiro Tanaka for an extended period, and that's going to really impact them. And Carlos Beltran has some more injuries right now, and that could weaken them as well. The Boston Red Sox are out. The Tampa Bay Rays have a long way to go to get back in. And this is a division ripe with opportunity. So, I mean, this is really complicated, and it's going to be really intriguing to see which direction this team goes, because this another opportunity like this may not exist for a while.
No, there's so many ways to look at this, and I mean, it's changed. It's changed like three or four times, you know, in the past couple of weeks, depending on how you want to look at it. Hey, Shai, listen, I really appreciate you doing this. Like I said, I've done the job. I know what it's like to haul ass across country and go on the radio. And I really appreciate you doing this. Get some sleep. Go to the moon over the river. No, what's it called? Moon Under the Water. It's a bar down from the hotel in Tampa. And have fun while you're down there.
I will. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Take care. That is Shai Davidi of Sportsnet. And doing yeoman duty. Dude writes, jumps in a red eye, goes to Tampa, comes on the radio. That's pretty solid. So let's reset what we know about this Adam Lind situation. After the game yesterday, Adam Lind told reporters that he went to get an MRI on his foot. And if you remember, he fouled a ball off his foot in Baltimore. He went to get an MRI on his foot. That is, he was basically, the story is he was talking to his mother and he was complaining about how the foot still wasn't healing. She said, go get an MRI. The way the story's told, Adam Lind goes and gets an MRI at the suggestion or the behest of his mother. The MRI shows a fracture. Adam Lind tells reporters after the game yesterday, could be 6 to 8 weeks. I'm going for second opinion in North Carolina. That second opinion is tomorrow. So, of course, the immediate thing is, okay, you hurt yourself in mid-June, and you were obviously hurt. You were hobbling around in Oakland. People could watch Adam Lind and say, boy, something's not necessarily right with this guy. He's still hurting. And it takes your mother. You know, the team medical staff doesn't make the call. It takes your mother to say, you know, go get an MRI, go get this looked at. That's the narrative that came out of the clubhouse after the game yesterday. And give you a little bit of logistical background. After a game, reporters go and talk to the manager. Then they go into the clubhouse to interview the players. Yesterday was getaway day. They're not taking their time getting out of L.A. They're going to haul ass. They're going to get in the charter. They're going to be out of there. They're going to be going to Tampa. So it's not like, so guys are running around. Guys are getting in the plane. Guys are packing up. It's getaway day. It's hectic. Adam Lind tells everybody this. Now, there's not much follow-up you can do to that at that point in the day. You got to get up and write. You got to prepare your reports and all that. So, I mean, made a couple of calls yesterday and fired out a couple of emails this morning. And here's my understanding of it from a couple of people in the Blue Jays organization. And the Blue Jays are not going to comment on this publicly until the second opinion comes back. First of all, 6 to 8 weeks. If, in fact, that is the case, we're talking 6 to 8 weeks from the time of the injury in June. So we're not talking 6 to 8 weeks from now. So we could be looking at Adam Lind being back, what, the end of July, second week in August. That's number one. Number two, the Jays took x-rays and CT scans at the time of the injury. Both were negative. They're saying Adam Lind told them it's getting better, it feels better. I'm told that the Jays don't always MRI for bone fractures. And we're going to have Will Carroll on. We'll ask him about this at some point, maybe in Baseball Central, because I want to get to the bottom of this. I'm not a doctor. I don't know when you MRI and when you don't MRI. All right? Adam Lind had told people on a couple of instances that he was feeling better. Fast forward to Oakland. And it was obvious in Oakland that Adam Lind was having some discomfort. He was 2 for 3 with a double in the last home game against the Brewers. He hit a double in his first game in Oakland. But it was obvious that he was laboring. So, and again, this is from Blue Jays people. At that point, the Jays sat down with him, and they're saying there was a discussion about an MRI in Anaheim. So the idea that Adam Lind jumped in the cab and went to get an MRI at a clinic by himself, slapped down the credit card and said, give me an MRI. It's not the way that happened. All that known, Shai Davidi's right. There are still questions to be asked about how this situation is allowed to linger. You know, of course, that we have asked a lot of questions about the management of this roster for a while. We've wondered why the Jays bothered picking up Cole Gillespie, why they've been reluctant to bring up Dan Johnson. I know there's a lefty-righty thing at work here. We know all that. Why are the Jays tied into Darren Mastriani, all this stuff. So it's understandable that a situation like this, coming when it does, coming at a time of such sensitivity, at a time of such importance in the standings, at a time when this team has succeeded in rebuilding and recapturing some of the loyalty of its fans that it lost last year. I understand why there's an importance to this. So we'll continue to stay on top of it. The Jays have the day off today in Tampa. They play tomorrow against the Rays, first of a three-game series. Once the results of Adam Lind's second opinion come back, the Jays will comment on the situation publicly. So that's what we know. That's to the best of my abilities to explain it to you. So it's not a James Reimer's mother situation. You think back to Dave Festruck of the Star calling up James Reimer's mother when James Reimer had the concussion. It's not a James Reimer's mother situation. But there are serious questions that need to be raised anyhow. Do we have time to go to the phones? What's our we are doing the Kyle Lowry news conference, by the way, live at 10 o'clock today. So I'm kind of juggling a couple of balls here. We're trying to move some folks around. When do we have Scotty coming on? All right, cool. So let's take a break, and we'll come back. And hey, we could have Will Carroll, we could have Scotty Bowman, we could have calls. I might do some juggling for you. It's a Jeff Blair Show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we'll be going live to Kyle Lowry's news conference at 10 o'clock at Real Sports. Kyle Lowry, of course, re-signing with the Toronto Raptors. Today's the day that NBA teams can start making their moves official. The rest of the NBA world waits for LeBron James. Masai Ujiri's going to get Kyle Lowry done and dusted officially. And that'll be most of his work done for the summer. And it's not even the middle of July. That's not a bad deal at all, is it? So in case you haven't heard the news, I'm doing a full-time thing here at Sportsnet. So I'll be writing for the website, sportsnet.ca, doing some magazine stuff, doing a little TV stuff as well. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I don't know why I wouldn't. As I said in Twitter, I usually wait probably 1 or 2 days before I block you. The Twitter handle is SN Jeff Blair. So at Glow Blair, dead, gone, hidden. So if you want to follow us at SN Jeff Blair. If you want to get involved in the conversation, use the hashtag Blair Show. Scotty Bowman, by the way, will join us at 9:40. So we'll be able to get Scotty Bowman's take on Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane's contract extensions, 8 years, $84 million each. Max contract, Scotty Bowman, senior advisor to hockey operations for the Chicago Blackhawks. We've got time, though. I want to take your calls on the Jays. A lot of you weighing in already. You've got stuff to talk about. You want to talk about Adam Lind. You want to talk about the series. You want to look ahead to Tampa. You want to talk about trades. Sam in North York, you're in Sportsnet 590, The Fan. What's up, Sam?
Good morning, Jeff.
How are you doing?
I am pretty good, but I could be better with the Jays playing. That being said, I don't think that it would be a wise move for the Jays to hold out and see how this hobbled together team plays until we start getting pieces back. I do think right now they jump into the trade market and not be looking to acquire one, but maybe two or more pieces. Because as Shai said, we don't know when this opportunity is going to be available again. And we don't know if a guy like Aaron Sanchez is going to blow out his arm or anything's going to happen to him or any of the other young pitchers. The window still exists for this year and at least next year. We've got pitching staff that's exceeding expectations, but it's not like they're pitching way over their head. It's just the guys that are supposed to could do well or doing really well. Dickey, his last couple starts, is really starting to look like an ace or the guy that we thought that we were getting when we traded for him. And I think that if the Jays can go out now before the All-Star break and get a couple solid pieces, any two of And I know it would be difficult, but if they could get any two of Adrian Beltre, Chase Headley, Chase Utley, maybe Daniel Murphy, Starlin Castro, there's some names being thrown around. I don't know what their availability is, but if they can go a couple solid guys, maybe right now bring up Dan Johnson. I don't know why no one's been talking about it, but maybe go pick up Alfonso Soriano, just in terms of bench and depth guy once those guys do come back and Jose Bautista is healthy. But I think that there are pieces out there that we could look to acquire, and then slowly our guys are going to come back. And as long as we can hang around in the race, if we're looking at a healthy Blue Jays team in September with the addition of a couple of these pieces, I mean, there's nobody in the division that could stop us. Baltimore's pitching staff is not that strong. The Yankees are just looking worse and worse. Boston's given us no reason to think that they're going to, you know, ever come back into it. And if the Jays can stave off the Tampa Bay Rays in this series, I mean, they're still pretty far back. So that's my take.
Yeah, this is Tampa Bay season, I think, coming up here. The thing is, I mean, Starlin Castro is a name that's out there, and you know, nobody really knows if the Cubs are serious about moving him. They certainly have infield depth now after the deal they made with Oakland getting Addison Russell. I mean, they've got depth to make a move like that. And the Cubs have kind of told people around baseball that now that they've made their deal with Oakland, where they have traded Jeff Samardzija and Jason Hamill to Oakland for position players, now they want to move and bring in some young pitchers. So by extension, what the Cubs are telling you is we'll move one of our young position players in return for your best pitching prospect. And I get the idea of making a deal to make the Jays better this year. I don't think Chase Headley accomplishes that, frankly. As I said, I don't want another project in here. I don't want a guy whose neck and back is being held together by, you know, binder twine, chewing gum, and paper clips. I don't want that. I need a guy who offers me some immediate help, can play every day. And frankly, if the guy can help me next year or the year after as well. See, I'm looking, in some ways, I'm almost looking for a core piece, because this Jays roster is going to have to look vastly different next season. No Colby Rasmus, no Melky Cabrera. There's going to be a lot of turnover with this team. So if I'm Alex Anthopoulos right now, I'm looking at making a deal that not only addresses my short-term issues, but maybe addresses my long-term issues as well. And maybe you don't get a Starlin Castro, but maybe you do get somebody in here who can help you for a couple of years as opposed to just a stopgap measure. But the flip side of that, obviously, is, hey, when else are you going to have an opportunity like this to win the American League East? It's interesting. Yeah, Alex Anthopoulos is the elements that will go into his decision as we get closer to the trade deadline. They're changing almost constantly. And let's see what the Adam Lind second opinion shows. Let's see what the Adam Lind second opinion shows. Right now, it's probably the best thing to do is not look too far ahead with Adam Lind. Let's just see what tomorrow's second opinion shows about his foot and go from there. You know, the Chicago Blackhawks did a fair amount of business yesterday, re-upping Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. Big extension, 8 years, $84 million each. You had to do it if you're the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, this is one of the game's dynamic duos. Of course, the flip side of that is you're in a salary cap league and you've essentially devoted just a little less than a third of your payroll to two players, admittedly two great players, two franchise players. I mean, there isn't a team in the NHL that wouldn't want one of these guys, let alone two. Scotty Bowman is the senior advisor to hockey operations for the Chicago Blackhawks. You know the man's resume. I don't have time to rattle off all the honors and the Stanley Cups and all that. Scotty Bowman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Scotty, thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, good to be on, Jeff.
It's a lot of money, Scotty, for two hockey players.
Well, you know, the only way you get those kind of players, Jeff, is when you finish right at the very bottom or just about at the bottom, and that's what happened with the Blackhawks, of course. They got Jonathan Toews on the third pick, and the next year they got Patrick Kane on the lottery pick, the first pick. So, it is when you look at the picture. But I really believe that the future of hockey is getting so popular that I think we're going to see the cap. I mean, right now, maybe, although their contracts are a year away, so they have another year at their present five-year contracts.
Right.
I think the cap is gonna continue to. I mean, if it escalates at 4 or 5%, which it's been doing, except for the lockout problem, you know, we're probably the first couple of years are going to be tough. But they've got some good young players. That the problem right now with the cap world, as everyone knows, is when you get a good young player coming into your team, you do get a little bit of relief for the first 3 years. But once those players, if they do produce in their first 3 years, they hit pretty big numbers the next contract, and we see it throughout the league. So you got to, the secret is, I mean, you have to. It's hard to draft when you don't draft low, but mm-hmm. you still can get players, and you have to develop them. And I think the trend in the NHL, as I see it now, all the teams are building up pretty big development programs. I know we started with a couple of guys. Now we've expanded it, and we got people that just go around and look at all the players that are on our list, try to speak with the coaches that they're playing on school, university teams or junior, and that's the secret, because once you get a good player and he has a couple of good years, you may not be able to keep him, you know, and you have to have somebody else coming in right behind him.
You know, Scotty, you're absolutely right, the way the game has changed. And what we're seeing now is when teams get a good young player or a young franchise player, they lock that player up. And it's, you know, we look at the Toronto Maple Leafs here, and we sort of get the impression the Leafs are kind of spinning their wheels because they haven't finished in the last, you know, far enough down in the bottom of the standings to get that franchise player. And right now it doesn't really matter how much money you have, does it? Because if teams are locking up young guys through their 20s, boy, I mean, you really have to hit it out of the park when it comes to scouting and player development at this point. You really do. Yeah. That's the only way forward.
Yeah, because then you have to overpay to get a free agent, you know, or if you do make a trade and you become fortunate to get a good player, you want to lock him up. And those players are often more expensive, but the Hawks were kind of fortunate. They missed on a couple of early picks, and then coming up in the future, Brandon Saad and Andrew Shaw, they were second and I think sixth round picks that are going to turn into real. They'll probably end up in the core. The core could change. I don't know how much it'll change, because right now they've got pretty solid defense group with the fellows like Keith and Seabrook. And then up front, you got, besides complement players, you got Patrick Sharp, and you know you got Marian Hossa, and so you got to keep your roster changes. The tough part is for the fans, really. But if they have a good team, they accept it. If they're anxious to move up in the standings, and you keep changing, they're wondering why don't you hold on to this player? But I think you have to educate them and say, look, can't keep everybody. We have to make changes. But in Taves and Kane, also, Jeff, the fact that they are really strong players on the ice, but they mean so much to the team off ice, mm-hmm. the marketing and the way that they cooperate with the marketing department. They go out and they're visible in the city, and they do a lot of stuff. They help sell the team. So and you know, they're both young guys that are have come along a long way since they started, but as players, they produced. I mean, I was surprised. I saw Patrick Kane's playoff record, 93 points, 91 games. I mean, that's kind of, you can't let those players go. Mm-hmm. If you do, how are you going to replace them? You know, you can't.
Scotty Bowman joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. You know, if you talked to people a couple of years ago and said to them, hey, you could see Jonathan Toews getting a long-term contract, people would go, yeah, I mean, he's a serious guy, keeps himself in shape, you know, he's a leader, et cetera, et cetera. People might have paused a little bit about Patrick Kane. There were times where, well, there were times, frankly, where Patrick Kane acted his age, probably off the ice. That's probably the best way to put it. He has changed a lot, though, hasn't he, in the course of a couple of seasons?
Well, he's grown up, that's right. I can tell a quick story on Patrick. And Patrick came into Chicago at 18 years of age, and in his second year, my son Stan, the general manager, he got Hodgkin's disease, and then he had a relapse, and it came back. And in his first 2 years, he lived with Stan and his family. He had two young boys. They were only two or three, or one was four and one was two. And when Stan got the Hodgkin's and he had to go through all the chemo, you know, they naturally expected Patrick to maybe not be able to stay there if he didn't want to, because it was going to be a bit of turmoil, as you know. And, you know, he stayed, and he really, for about three, 4 months, he kind of acted like their dad. He took them, you know, and played with them ball hockey on the street. He was in the basement. So, you know, that's kind of when I started to think, well, you know, he's going to turn the corner, this guy. He's got a good heart. You know, he loves the game. He works all summer. He's changed. You're right. And, you know, the people didn't like what he was doing in a couple of instances. But like you said, he's 19, 20 years old. Everything gets out in the open most of the time. I think he's reeled it in, and now he's a real leader on the team.
Scotty, Jonathan Toews, the great players that you've coached, the great players that you've seen, where would you, I'm not going to ask you to rank them, that's unfair, but is there a comparable you can think of, a guy that you've coached that compares to Jonathan Toews or vice versa?
Well, the two that come to my mind, one in Montreal and one in Detroit, are Jacques Lemaire with Montreal and maybe not in the leadership at the time, but he was a great two-way player. He didn't mm-hmm. get the credit. He played with Lafleur and Schott. He scored 30 to 40 goals. He did most of the, if you look at his playoff record, and then Steve Yzerman in Detroit. And they were two very similar players. If you get those kind of players that can kill penalties, take faceoffs, just become so responsible, that's what Jonathan is. I mean, at times you look at him, you wonder, is he one of the top in the league? But he comes every night with the same type of game. And I really think those kind of players, they're the kind that win for you, you know. And we saw it this year with Los Angeles. You know, they've developed guys like Anze Kopitar, and he's along the same lines. You know, they come with a full game, and it's pretty interesting for the coach to have players like that.
Mm. Scotty, listen, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. You be well. Have a great summer. We'll do it again.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
Good Take luck. Care. Bye. That is Scotty Bowman, senior advisor to hockey operations for Chicago Blackhawks. Like, one of the best things about this job is you get to talk to people like Scotty Bowman. Chicago Blackhawks re-upping Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. 8-year extensions, $84 million each. And as Scotty Bowman said, you know, it's guys come along, you got to take care of them. You look after them. It's the way the game's going now. And I think you heard in his conversation, the underlying thought process here is that, yeah, you know what, for a couple of years, it's going to be tough. You're looking at like $20 million. You're looking about just slightly less, probably about 25%, maybe a little less, of your salary going to two guys. And Scotty Bowman says it'll be tough for a couple of years. But you know what? You got to hope that the salary cap goes up as revenues go up. And this is why you draft players, why you develop players. This is why you play the game. You want to be in a position where you have guys like Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. And I know people are wondering why Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane didn't give the Blackhawks a hometown discount. You know what? I bet that never even came up in conversation. So there you go. The Blackhawks re-upping Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane. Big extensions. If you're a Leafs fan, you're looking at this and you're going, man, that Stanley Cup is just getting farther and farther and farther away, because there are going to be no impact free agents out there. You got to draft these guys. You got to develop them. You got to sign them long term. Put up with the risk. We are going to go to Real Sports at 10 o'clock. Kyle Lowry, his contract with the Raptors being announced officially. We will join the news conference live. We'll be back to take your calls. This is the Jeff Blair Show, and this is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.